And what they then do is they sacrifice the victim and they drink the blood immediately, which has this chemical substance in it. And they go crazy. I mean, you know,
I've always been aware of the satanic ritual abuse connection with what's happened to Holly Gregg.
I mean, I can tell pretty much if somebody's a real Luciferian, and because they look like that in the eyes. I don't care if they're black, white, who they are. Okay, if it all comes out on this guy from my sources, they don't just watch snuff films, and we know that's a huge industry. They produce them.
The movement's satanic. And I make no apologies for that, because most of what's underpinning it, this complex web of secret societies, there's a common denominator, which is Freemasonry. And at the highest levels of Freemasonry, the ideology that it's Luciferian satanic worship.
Whether it's decoding symbolism in pop culture and music videos, making claims of ritual abuse and sacrifice, or blaming the entire world's corruption on a satanic elite, elements of the alternative media have always promoted the idea of Satanism in various contexts. Obviously, I'm an avid consumer and producer of alternative media myself, and I've always been intrigued by these theories, and at one time, I guess I believed in some of them. But the more I've explored the topic of Satanism, the less sense it all seems to make. In fact, it's difficult really to get anybody to even agree on the definition of Satanism. For some people it's just a throwaway term, no different than calling something evil. Yet other people who are deeply religious and Christian, the idea of Satanism obviously has deeply religious connotations. Some people lump Freemasonry and the Illuminati and Bilderberg and Skull and Bones and all sorts of other historic and modern groups under the satanic banner. They call it all Satanism. Yet when you go to the self-proclaimed Satanists themselves, they basically just call themselves colourful atheists. You know, they use metaphor and poke fun at religion. They're basically an anti-religion. So we can't even agree on a definition of Satanism. So rather than going down that road of trying to define it, let's explore a few specific stories that some of you will probably already be aware of and see if they themselves stand up to scrutiny. You are, of course, tuned in to the Wide Shut webcast. I'm your host, Keelan Balderson. It's been a while since I've done regular shows, but I've been particularly inspired recently by Tom Secker's Clandestine series, which you can find on spyculture.com. So I thought, what the hell? You know, if I've got the time, why not do some more podcasts? And here we are. So I hope you enjoy today's show and find the information valuable. So let's begin with this term, satanic ritual abuse. It's used to describe how Satanists allegedly abuse children as part of satanic ritual. And one story that reignited this idea in the alternative media in the past few years was that of Holly Gregg. The story was uncritically reported by alternative media outlets like the UK Column with Brian Gerrish. David Icke used it as circumstantial evidence to back up his claims that there are elite networks of blood drinkers and shapeshifters that ritually abuse children. And for those that aren't aware of this story, here's a brief synopsis from the campaign spokesman, Robert Green.
First of all, as many of you will be aware, the story first came to light in 2000, the year 2000. It was May 2000 when Holly, who at the time was 20, Holly, as many of you know, is Down syndrome, decided to told her mother about the abuse that she'd received from her father and brother that started when she was age six. It was due to a domestic row. The father, Dennis Charles Mackey, was a violent man, and they had to flee. Anne took Holly from the home, to be from the home, because of the violence and the threats of violence. And it was after they got away from the home that Holly began to tell the story. Now, because Holly has Down syndrome, she sort of doesn't always put things together in chronological order. She remembers things in great detail, and she is a competent witness. It's very important that everybody should realise that. But she can't always link things together, and she tends to come out with bits and pieces of the information on a piecemeal basis. So when Anne, the mother, learned about this, she went to the police on the 19th of May 2000 to actually tell the police what had happened, that her husband and her son were responsible for the attacks on Holly. The police did very little about it. They did interview Dennis Mackey, but didn't do anything further about it. And a couple of months later, Holly started revealing other people who were involved in the ring, which obviously came as a terrible shock to Anne. And in August, on the 24th of August, Holly then named another 14 abusers. And these abusers included a senior police officer, two social workers, including her own carer, an accountant, and several other people in the professions, including, most significantly for a judge or a sheriff, as they call them in Scotland.
Despite a massive social media campaign, I'm sure you all remember Google Holly Gregg, people had buttons and badges, and there were protests and meetups, and there were loads of Facebook pages and people sharing stories. Despite all of that, nothing of what Robert Green and Anne Gregg say is backed up by any evidence. And I'm going to say that quite boldly, because I've looked for it, I've interviewed people they've accused of being involved, and it's just not true. It did not happen the way they say it happened, if it even happened at all. For example, some people they claim were involved in the abuse don't even exist, i.e. the names are not on any public record anywhere. They're just simply not real people. A lot of the abuse was said to have taken place at a Sheriff Buchanan's sister's house, but he doesn't have a sister, so his sister can't have a house. And he doesn't have a sister-in-law, so his sister-in-law can't have a house. And nobody knows where this house is. There are no witnesses to corroborate anything about the house. And Holly has never described any detail about the house. Other people that Robert Green listed as victims alongside Holly were either not yet born, or were adults before they ever even met Holly. Some of these people have came out publicly to categorically state that they were never abused. And people wonder why the police and the mainstream media and the Scottish establishment have done nothing to help Holly Gregg. Because the basic foundation of the story isn't true. If somebody makes a claim, you have to weigh it up against the evidence. If there's no evidence, if names and places don't add up, then your only option as a critical thinker is to reject it. That's how this works. Now, you could say Robert Green is an atrocious investigator and he makes careless mistakes and he's just completely muddied the waters. That's fair enough, but then it's on him to go back and reanalyse the information that he claims to have and present it in such a way that people can go through it and actually see whether there is anything of merit. But he's not. He keeps pushing forward with the same debunked claims and has made no attempt to justify anything that he has done. Now, there is some medical documentation that showed Holly was not a virgin, and you can get a lot of the documentation about the case on the hollygreggcoverup.net. Unlike those behind the story, the folks behind that website who I've interviewed have been very meticulous in documenting what actually is available and what is just hearsay and false claims and things like that. So because Holly was found not to be a virgin, she was given a payment by the controversial Criminal Injuries Compensation Scheme. Kicker, it's basically a government agency that makes payouts to hush people that the system has failed. But in the process, a lot of undeserving payments are made. You can just Google a lot of the horror stories about people simply making things up and getting payouts. That's just part of what they do. The government basically just opens up a big net and tries to catch people that they failed, but the net is so wide that lots of undeserving people also get compensation. By definition, compensation made by Kicker is made without any evidence being heard in a courtroom. It's not held up to the same standards as a trial or a police investigation. It's expressly stated within the terms of the payout that it's not a sign of guilt of the accused. And at the time of her payout, Holly was a 20-year-old adult with a boyfriend. But Anne Gregg, her mother, failed to mention that. So they went to the panel with a story. Holly was not a virgin, and because the burden of proof is so low within this process, she was given a payout. It's not evidence, it's not proof. Anyone with a critical mind can go in and actually look at this and be objective. It's a controversial system. It's been in the news quite a bit over the years. If you go to the Police Complaints Commissioner report, they conclude that there was no evidence of abuse. And a doctor said that signs of previous penetration does not necessarily even indicate sexual activity, let alone non-consensual sexual abuse. The evidence just simply doesn't fit the idea that she was abused for over a decade by a 22-strong gang of satanic paedophiles. Anne didn't seem to notice anything at the time. You know, like, where does my daughter keep disappearing to? Why is she in constant pain? Why is she despondent and keeps having nightmares? None of that took place, and there's no physical evidence. And Robert Green was eventually convicted with breach of the peace and breaking bail conditions. He'd basically been ordered to stop naming and shaming innocent people, sending letters to neighbours and community saying, this person is a paedophile, with no evidence. But he carried on anyway, and he carried on giving out leaflets, and he basically ruined the reputation and lives of many people, without even a basic shred of proof. And I think the most tragic thing about this case is the exploitation of poor Holly. A vulnerable person does not deserve to be paraded around the internet, going on chat shows and being paraded in front of hundreds of chanting people. I mean, I'm not even sure whether I should be doing this episode. We're talking about her medical records and things like that. But it wasn't me that started this, and it's not me that continues to dupe possibly thousands of people with this story. I'd like to think that in exposing the fraud, I'm helping to make it die down quicker. People can look at it and go, oh crap, I shouldn't have really gotten into this, and they just move on and start to ignore it. That seems to be what's happening. And it really is a shame, because if there was an isolated incident of abuse, which there may have been, it's been completely clouded by this baseless story, where everyone from David Icke to the UK column, they've all got their own vested interests, and they've all added their own spin and nonsense on top of it until it's grown into something completely ridiculous. And thankfully, interest in the story has begun to die down, although Robert Green was recently rearrested and that sparked a little bit of action online, but generally it's kind of fizzled out, likely because most people have realised they've been fooled. But a dubious figure named Belinda McKenzie continues to operate the campaign website, and she's still taking donations without transparency and promoting it on social media and things. And if you do a bit of background research on McKenzie, it becomes apparent that she's notorious for supporting red herrings within the alternative media, such as you know, 9/11 energy beam weapon theories. She's interacted a lot with the self-professed messiahs that have been muddying the waters of 7-7 truth, that clouds a lot of the work of people like Tom Secker and the 7-7 Truth campaign website and the film that I've made. She's promoted things like the Star Child Skull Alien Conspiracy. And most interestingly is that the Charities Commission shut her down for running a fraudulent charity called IranAid that may even be linked to the MKO terrorist organisation. There's all sorts of other things. She's been the landlady of ex-MI5 agents David Shaler and Annie Michon. She bankrolls a lot of the 9/11 truth movement and has people in and out of her house all the time, you know, activists and so on. In my opinion, and this is just a hunch really, based on just the way she acts and who she supports, if anyone is, quote, COINTELPRO or an agent provocateur within the alternative media, whether deliberately or just through sheer ignorance and chance, it's probably her, because she does a good job of undermining everything that a lot of people have worked hard for. You know, what better way to cover up real abuse and paedophile networks and things like that than promoting a fake one? For a more detailed analysis of the case itself and the lack of evidence and all the detail surrounding it, I'd advise people to listen to my previous show on the subject, where I interviewed two of the accused and also two people who had defected from the campaign once they realised it was a fraud. They helped to create the HollyGregCoverUp.net website that documents the case from start to finish and includes police documents, medical documents, and basically takes the story bit by bit and breaks it down for all of its fallacies. But what's interested me most in recent weeks was how the story morphed into satanic ritual abuse. The allegations that those who allegedly abused Holly were Freemasons, were Satanists. And a quick Google or search on YouTube will demonstrate that many of the campaign's supporters regard this case as satanic ritual abuse.
You mentioned satanic abuse.
Yes.
Is that it seems like that's quite a new sort of...
Yes, it is a new thing. It's not really new to the case, but I deliberately not mentioned it. I have to say, I think many of you who've been following the story will know that some of the crimes that have been committed are so appalling and so shocking and so disgusting that, in a way, I didn't mention them too much because they're the things that should come before the court in due course. And obviously in the early stages of this case, when I was trying to get people to believe in this astonishing sequence of events, I felt that it was probably not wise to sort of ascribe motives to people, what people had done. I was more interested in what they'd actually done rather than the motive for doing so. But now it's become quite clear that there is, well, I've always been aware of the satanic ritual abuse connection with what's happened to Holly Gregg, but it's now become quite widely known that there is a network, a very, very serious network operating up and down this country. And that's one of the reasons why Shropshire, where none of the crimes took place, suddenly jumped in and tried to persecute Anne and Holly to shut them up. It is related to this kind of network that exists all over the country. And I can tell you I have some names. And some names are... You wonder why these stories are not reported in the mainstream media. Well, I know a few people in the mainstream media in senior positions who are involved in this. I also know the names of certain politicians, certain people in the House of Lords, certain MPs, some of whom Mr. Hemming will know. Not Mr. Hemming, I must say, but certain other ones. And before, in the due course, I will be revealing the names of all those people.
I said to Brian,
Ike is every bit to blame as well. He has the biggest listenership.
Yeah, I blame him a lot.
Yes, he took it internationally.
Yeah, Alec Jones and everybody. It was just horrendous.
Mm. And of course, Ike likes to kind of harp on about satanic abuse and things like this, but I mean, he himself never really gives any evidence. Something you pointed me to, I think a video by somebody called Pyrite, is it? And in there, he mentions some kind of connection between Robert Greene and the Tavistock Institute or something like that, and that he was told to harp up about the satanic side of the story and things. I mean, what's all that about?
Well, it's quite interesting, and I do think that, you know, the Holy Grail case, this seemed to be a successful campaign. So, of course, it was going to attract people latching onto it. So around about November or so last year, Robert got in tow with this man called Wilfred Wong, who represented a Christian group, Christians Against Satanic Abuse, effectively. And involved Robert in meetings with people who were interested in Satanism and high-up people that had been working in that field for a long time, including Valerie Sinison.
Eva Harding as well worked for the Tavistock.
Eva Harding. So Robert was meeting with these people in a big house in Golders Green, having a nice sort of middle-class dinner party with these people. He felt he'd arrived. They were saying that he was, you know, they were taking him into the Parliament. He was going to talk about the Holy Grail case. He was going to present it in Parliament. Of course, it was in a meeting room in the Parliament buildings. It wasn't in Parliament itself.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, this was a big step for him. And to do this, they wanted him to sex up the satanic aspect of the abuse. And he did. He got up in front of a hall full of people and say, yes, it's satanic. I didn't want to talk about it for years because it might put people off or whatever. But yes, it's a satanic element to it. And of course, those YouTube videos got thousands more hits than any of his other YouTube videos. This is what people were waiting to hear.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, there was no more satanic abuse to it than any abuse at all. I mean, none of it. It's all been fabricated.
Well, when you see Valerie Sinison and what she's been connected to, you know, she's convinced people that they have been satanically abused and they haven't. And she worked for the Tavistock for years, which Eva Harding, that is one of the reports that they will always refer back to. Eva Harding, she was the one that interviewed Holly, having had a good chat with Anne first. So she's going into this session with Holly already being primed, you know, my daughter's been abused. Now Eva Harding, she's dead now, so she can't defend herself at all, but she worked for the Tavistock for a while as well, and she was looking for the same thing as Valerie Sinison, satanic abuse. She was looking for the abuse, you know. And as far as they're concerned, they don't investigate anything. And I think that was one of the pieces, again, it's on the website if people want to go and look at. There's a great long article about Valerie Sinison.
It's very interesting. Everybody should look at that. That's
It was Carol Myers. It was the Carol Myers case that Valerie Sinison was involved with. And Carol Myers ended up killing herself. We've actually been in contact with Carol Myers' family, and they were horrified at the parallels between the Holly Gregg stuff and their case.
Wow.
And the satanic side of it. And there is actually, in this paperwork that was distributed around, you know, there's bits that say that Holly said she saw somebody, a man or an adult, satanically murdered. And Robert, you know, again, stands up and says, you know, it's all satanic, and the children were being held down and beaten with belts. And, you know,
just ridiculous.
I mean, you know, what with these children that didn't even know her? It's all been, you know, moulded around the story that they would like to hear.
I found it very interesting that it was not long after the satanic side of the Holly Gregg story became more prominent that the whole Jimmy Savile scandal erupted in the mainstream media, and those in the alternative media naturally began to try and make links between what happened with Jimmy Savile and Holly Gregg and try to make parallels between them. And I'll start off by saying, obviously, there is no question that Jimmy Savile is a vile predator that committed many, many crimes. However, that doesn't mean that every single allegation made against him is true. And one allegation that the alternative media ran with was that Saville carried out satanic ritual abuse on his victims. And I found it particularly ironic because proponents of this story often rally against the mainstream media. But the story that Jimmy Saville was a Satanist and committed satanic ritual abuse was first published in the UK Daily Express, one of the worst mainstream tabloid newspapers out there. Their front page is usually a mishmash of celebrity gossip and football and hate mongering. Yet, as soon as they publish something that fits an alternative worldview, then everybody jumps on it as the truth that this is evidence of satanic ritual networks of elite Satanists, and they give it no critical thought. And if you want a real connection between the Holly Gregg hoax and Jimmy Saville, it's that the woman peddling the story that Jimmy Saville was a Satanist is Valerie Sinison, a trustee of the Institute for Psychotherapy and Disability and former lecturer at the Tavistock Clinic. And her peers in psychotherapy are the ones that are linked to sexing up the satanic side of the Holly Gregg case. And in the Daily Express story, Valerie Sinison claimed that two of her psychotherapy patients were victims of satanic ritual abuse at the hands of Jimmy Saville. One victim, she claims, had been a patient at Stoke Mandeville in 1975 when Saville was a regular visitor. She recalled being led into a room that was filled with candles on the lowest level of the hospital, somewhere that was not regularly used by staff. Several adults were there, including Jimmy Saville, who, like the others, was wearing a robe and a mask. She recognised him because of his distinctive voice and the fact that his blonde hair was protruding from the side of the mask. He was not the leader, but he was seen as important because of his fame. She was molested, raped and beaten, and heard words that sounded like Ave Satanas, a Latinized version of Hail Satan, being chanted. There was no mention of any other child being there, and she cannot remember how long the attack lasted, but she was left extremely frightened and shaken. It sounds like pretty shocking stuff, but I don't believe it, and I'll explain why. First off, we definitely know that Saville is guilty of abuse and that he used his high position in society to gain access to the most vulnerable. We know this because hundreds of alleged victims and witnesses have come forward, each with similar stories. The only sign of satanic ritual abuse comes from Dr. Sinison, and she hasn't provided any evidence for the allegations. Instead, basically, they boil down to two stories that her patients allegedly told her during psychotherapy sessions. This is second-hand information to begin with. If we assume these patients even exist, we've not heard anything directly from them. Just because somebody supposedly said something in a therapy session does not make it true. There was no investigation into any of these allegations. At this point, anyone could literally say anything about Saville for an infinite number of dubious or delusional reasons. The truth of the situation lies in the overall body of allegations, their consistency, their corroboration. There is a distinct pattern to what he did, and there's lots of witnesses and victims that have come forward, and that picture has emerged. The allegation of satanic abuse is the odd one out. It doesn't fit, there's no corroboration, it's only a couple of stories that are second hand coming to us from this dubious Christian psychotherapist that's linked to a bunch of other dubious people. She's the only one peddling this, and I think there are ulterior motives and prejudices around this story, and people aren't taking a critical look at exactly where this information is coming from and why it might be coming out. So you heard in my interview with the Holly Gregg hoax team that Dr. Sinison is part of a group of Christians and also religious politicians and other psychotherapists, and they call themselves the Committee on Ritual Abuse, the CRA. And since the 90s, at least the 90s, they have basically been actively promoting the idea of satanic ritual abuse. They're almost like a lobby group, a pressure group. They want this idea out there in the public for whatever reason, maybe because they're Christians and they just have this bias, mental illness that they have to thrust on everybody else. But their role has been to promote satanic ritual abuse to the media and to the government. But the only evidence they've ever provided are stories. Stories from therapy sessions where therapists claim to have uncovered deep-seated trauma from people's pasts. They've pointed to various cases that went through the courts and were investigated and turned out to be false. But they created this body of, when you look at it on face value, it looks shocking, but there isn't actually anything to it. They've never presented any tangible evidence for this supposed widespread occurrence of satanic ritual abuse. Where is it? It just isn't there. And I want to be clear, abuse exists, obviously, and at various points, moderately sized networks have been uncovered. There's quite a few that seem to be being uncovered now. What is lacking is evidence of a satanic elite, you know, a class of people in government and business and so on, carrying out satanic ritual abuse on a mass scale. That's the theory. That's what David Icke talks about. That's what's insinuated about people who attend Bohemian Grove, and the royals are supposed to be tied in with it as well. The Holly Gregg story was supposed to reach the top levels of government and establishment in Scotland, but it didn't because it was a fraud. There have been cases, isolated cases of fucked up people using pseudo-Satanism as part of abuse, but that's not the same thing. Some psychopath dressing up in a robe and chanting nonsense from a movie or a Crowley book because they get off on it is not the same thing as a massive group of powerful Satanists that believe in Satanism as a religion and carrying out rituals because of that religion. Where's the evidence for that? And you also have to remember, there actually is a Church of Satan. There are people that recognise themselves as philosophical Satanists or Levaians or whatever, and you can go join them. They have quite open beliefs. I personally think they're a bit silly and a bit attention-seeking, but do they deserve to be lumped in with all these allegations? They've never been charged with anything like this. And that's the problem with definitions again. I think people just like to use the term Satanism because it's creepy and mysterious. They don't use it in a defined manner. Often it's just used superficially to evoke images of a scary guy in a robe doing magic. Well, do you believe in magic? Like, what's your point? And in the late 80s into the 90s, this kind of superficial fear of Satanism became a hot-button issue, particularly in the United States, where there are a lot of sensationalist preachers and a lot of trash TV that likes to draw off this kind of thing for ratings. And it became what is widely known now as a moral panic, this irrational fear that didn't really have any basis. It was called satanic panic. And a good example of the time that you can find on YouTube is this special presented by Fox News hack Geraldo Rivera. He has this live TV audience and it's all dramatic, and he brings on a completely confused Ozzy Osbourne to interrogate him on his satanic music and how he's affecting the youth. And they go to all these completely unconnected stories about people that claimed, oh, I was doing this under the orders of Satan, and all these murders and things that really have nothing to do with a, quote, widespread network of Satanism. It just doesn't exist. And all the examples that he uses were thoroughly debunked. But check this out.
Deals with devil worship and satanic beliefs. It contains explicit scenes and descriptions of violent crimes and rituals. Because of the program's theme and controversial subject matter, parental discretion should be exercised.
You have to give a blood sacrifice to Satan. It's supposed to keep you protected. It's supposed to keep you pure.
They said that if we told that the devil would come and kill our parents.
It doesn't matter if you believe in Satan. It doesn't matter if you believe in demons. What's important is to know that there are people out there that do, and they're willing to do anything to accomplish their goal.
Satanism is more than a hodgepodge of mysticism and fantasy, more than a Halloween motif. It's a violent impulse. It preys on the emotionally vulnerable, especially teenagers, often lonely and lost.
It basically started out like with the killing of animals. Then there's always the heavy metal music and drugs don't help.
It attracts the angry and the powerless, who often sink into secret lies.
They asked me if I had ever thought about killing somebody just to watch them die. And they asked me if I would like to join a satanic cult.
Possessed by an obsessive fascination with sex and drugs, and yes, heavy metal rock and roll.
Satan's child.
Often Satanism seems to be a personal psychodrama, a kind of license for strange, sometimes violent behavior.
A bloodbath would be a cleansing and a purification of a planet that has been dirtied and degraded for too long.
Sometimes it's just half-baked mumbo-jumbo and scrawled symbols. But other times it goes deeper, deadly.
Tommy died as brutally as his mother did, but at his own hands.
I loved him dearly, but he also took my wife who I loved.
Satanism goes far beyond teenage obsession. Today there are cults that worship the devil, engage in secret ceremonies, believe in ancient, though bizarre, theology, all of it constitutionally protected, as long as no laws are broken.
I believe that hate is necessary in a controlled way just as much as love is necessary.
The other face of adult Satanism is violent and fiendish, centered on sexual ritual and torture, frequently descending into the vilest crime of all, sexual abuse of children.
He has drawn pictures of a child being sacrificed. He's talked about animal sacrifices. He's disclosed molestation.
And what of their own children? Some are born into satanic cults and grow up as lifelong members. Others are desperate to flee, but dread the penalty of grotesque death.
They're going to catch me, it don't matter. I could run and run and run. They're always going to catch me because they're all over.
And beyond the mayhem and monsters, it's said that a nationwide network of satanic criminals exists. Start with the warped and wicked Charles Manson.
It's everything that human beings don't understand. It's all their fears. It's what they're not sure of. You dig what I'm saying? Satan to me would be God.
Or the demented Son of Sam killer David Berkowitz. These and others purportedly linked to the devil worship underground.
Here's Satan.
Here's Satan.
Here's Satan.
It's all over the United States and probably all over the world because it's just something that people are experimenting with now.
Impossible to measure. Easy to doubt. The very mention of it invites ridicule.
Come out.
No. I won't let her go. No.
Often the choice is to avoid confronting it, ignore it, find other explanations, or laugh it off. That is not the choice we have made tonight. We have chosen to ask why. Via satellite, we'll be asking the youngest person on Oklahoma's death row, just 17 when he killed in the name of Satan, why he murdered his own parents. And to Southern California, where we will ask the parents of children in the notorious McMartin preschool why they claim their kids were satanically abused. And to London, where rock star Ozzy Osbourne will tell us why he feels he and heavy metal music are getting a bum rap. And to the state penitentiary in Angola, Louisiana, to ask convicted killer Charles Gervais why he thought the devil would award him 10,000 souls.
The Investigative News Group presents the Geraldo Rivera Special. Devil Worship. Exposing Satan's underground.
Whether a Satan exists is a matter of belief, but we are certain that Satanism exists. To some, it's a religion. To others, it's the practice of evil in the devil's name. It exists, and it's flourishing. Members of our studio audience tonight will attest to that. They are friends and foes of Satanism, devil worshippers and law enforcers, experts and victims. They'll help us understand this force that exalts evil and darkness. We'll be asking why. Why does it exist? And why does it appeal to so many vulnerable people, especially the young? Now, the very young and the impressionable should definitely not be watching this program tonight. This is not a Halloween fable. This is a real-life horror story, and it will give small children bad dreams.
If anything's going to give small children bad dreams, it's your mustache, mate. But you heard Rivera there refer to the McMartin preschool trial, and he had some parents on from that case. And this was a high-profile case in California where a group of parents accused a preschool of abusing their children, and some went as far as saying that it was satanic abuse. But in the end, after about 6 years of trials and investigations and things, all charges were dropped and no convictions were made. A few of the jurors believed that abuse may have taken place against some of the children, but they couldn't determine who did it, if it happened at all. And much like you could argue with Holly Gregg, the whole story reached such absurd levels that it clouded anything that may have actually happened in reality. Though also, like Holly Gregg, it still seems unlikely that anything did happen, and some of the alleged abused children have since publicly stated that it didn't take place. In 2005, one of the victims stated, "Never did anyone do anything to me, and I never saw them do anything. I said a lot of things that didn't happen. I lied. Any time I would give them an answer that they didn't like, they would ask again and encourage me to give them the answer they were looking for. I felt uncomfortable and a little ashamed that I was being dishonest, but at the same time, being the type of person I was, whatever my parents wanted me to do, I would do." And also with that case, there was part of it was thrown out because of perjury, so somebody was pressured into lying and since admitted that they were lying. So, yeah, just a complete false story. No satanic abuse at all. No evidence for anything. And I just read a quote out there from one of the alleged victims. And in my opinion, I think that this same kind of coercion is present in a lot of these cases in different forms, whether it's the parents, whether it's psychotherapists, encouraging delusions, whether it's social services. There often appears to be some kind of coercion. And one of the more high-profile examples in Britain was in 1990 in Rochdale, when up to 20 children were removed from their families by social services because they were allegedly, again, victims of a satanic ritual abuse network. And part of this was sparked by literature that was provided by the NSPCC charity. They basically had provided pamphlets and guidance on what to look out for as social workers. And one of the points was, or one of the paragraphs was, about satanic indicators. And it seems those in Rochdale took this far too seriously and removed quite happy children from their homes without any evidence. Now, quite why a private charity can influence the government so strongly, I don't know. But as I say, the allegations all turned out to be false, and the children that were removed were eventually given back.
In 1990, on an estate in North Manchester, families woke up to every parent's worst nightmare. With no warning, at 7:30 a.m., police and social workers came to take their children.
Come on, police, open up. Come along, sir, we know you're in there.
I remember waking up one morning to a load of noise and people coming up the stairs.
Police!
Just remember all the banging at the door. It was just, like, really loud.
Open up!
No!
Police barged the way into the bedroom. I mean, I was asleep on my bed and my brother was on his bed over the other side and that.
Let go of me! I didn't do it!
police coming upstairs, and I was saying, you know, who are you? And they were saying CID, I just heard CID, police, and the social workers.
They were telling my mum to get out of bed and get dressed, and then they come in our room and told us to get up.
Mum! Mum, what's going on, Mum?
My mum sat up in bed, still with her night clothes on, obviously vulnerable, with a load of men around her, police, CID, and then just the odd woman. And they were saying to her, you know what it's about, just get up, get dressed and get out. And she's screaming and crying, hysterical.
Got dressed, and then I could hear my dad outside in the hallway. He was going mad, he was going apeshit at these, I know, social workers and police and that.
Over 6 months, a satanic panic spread over North Manchester. 16 children from the Langley estate near Rochdale were taken into care. It was alleged they'd been forced into a devil-worshipping cult and sexually abused by their parents.
And that was it. They were gone.
After a year-long investigation, the parents were proved to be completely innocent. But the question remains, what drove the social workers to separate these children from their parents for months, and in some cases, years? Now, in this Real Story special, we reveal what really happened the day Satan came to town.
I definitely urge you all to watch that full piece on YouTube when you get the chance, because it demonstrates the very real abuse that children and parents go through when false allegations have been made. And I find it very ironic that the UK column in particular are one of the leading voices against the government and the secret courts and the overbearing social services system in Britain. You know, they often run stories about children who have supposedly been taken into care wrongly, and they give the parents a voice and things like that. Yet they were also one of the leading voices promoting the Holly Gregg hoax. So it worries me that an organisation that would appear to be very loose with facts and evidence and not really doing any solid research into the cases that they report would be so involved in these kinds of cases. It just worries me that they may be getting things wrong and potentially could be doing more damage than good. But anyway, we see in the 90s that this idea of satanic ritual abuse was being promoted quite strongly in the United States, with cases like McMartin and Trash TV from Geraldo. But also in Britain, the CRA was also gaining traction, along with cases like the one in Rochdale. And in 1994, the CRA's Valerie Sinison edited a collection of essays entitled Treating Survivors of Satanic Abuse, and she claimed that many of her patients were victims of satanic abuse, and this was based purely on her clinical notes rather than any tangible evidence, like we talked about earlier with Jimmy Savile. Sinison and others were beginning to sort of give the movement this impression of a scientific basis. Well, if this shrink says it's happening and she has evidence, then it must be happening, right? Well, not really. The panic that all this created actually prompted a 3-year Department of Health inquiry by a professor, Jean LaFontaine, and she looked at 84 alleged cases of ritual abuse, and the majority of them were completely false. Where there was ritualism involved, quote, the sexual abuse occurred outside of the rituals, indicating the goal of the abuser was sexual gratification rather than ritualistic or religious. And in a few cases where actual Satanism was alleged, it turned out that this was influenced by adults, and Professor LaFontaine believes that this distracted from the abuse itself. Like I said, in the cases we've talked about, it sort of clouded what may have actually gone on if something did go on. And in the 90s, similar research came to the same conclusions in the United States. Where there were cases that involved, quote, Satanism, these were isolated and what's considered pseudo-Satanism. There was no actual evidence of widespread cults or networks or people working together. These are just lone nuts you know, following themes from horror films and so on. And I'd like to point you to a 2002 Telegraph article about the CRA, the Committee on Ritual Abuse, because regardless of the conclusions that were made in these reports, they had begun to get elements of Westminster on their side, people from the House of Lords and such, and they started having meetings in Parliament. So if you want the article, just Google "The People Who Believe That Satanists Might Eat Your Baby." And I've linked it below as well, and you can find all of this in the source information. But basically, in 2002, a private meeting chaired by Lord Alton and evangelical Christian Wilfred Wong was held to promote the idea that ritual abuse should be enshrined in law, so that new legislation should be written, so, quote, hundreds, if not thousands of crimes could be brought to justice. But when you look at it, if real abuse had actually taken place in any of these cases and there was evidence for such abuse, there are laws in place that were quite capable of serving justice. They just wanted more publicity for their agenda. And again, it's ironic. If all this was supposed to be a big cover-up and the highest ranks of government were involved in satanic abuse and so on, how the hell are they having meetings in Parliament with politicians? They're a lobby group. And this is what that Telegraph article concluded. Professor LaFontaine's verdict on Valerie Sinison goes to the heart of the problem. It's depressing to find someone who has a position at leading London hospitals who is so cut off from what research methodology is and what rational evidence is, she says. When Miss Sinison announces that she has clinical evidence of infanticide and cannibalism, she means that her patients have told her stories about them. The implication is that because the psychological suffering of these people is real, their memories must be accurate. And like I said before, Sinison is the one peddling the Jimmy Savile Satanist stories, and the CRA are the ones that met with Robert Greene to make the Holly Gregg case seem more satanic. And at this point, I'd like to point you to an article I wrote back in January 2013 called "Satanic Panic Reemerges in Jimmy Savile Scandal," which is basically a summary of what we've covered today. But I just want to read the final part, because I believe that the real abuse here is coming from people like Valerie Sinison, and she deserves to be struck off. She's encouraging people's delusions, if not implanting them. And this is what I wrote at the end of that article. Naturally, this has given rise to the idea that some psychoanalysts, rather than uncovering cases of satanic abuse, are actually implanting the idea into their patients' minds, or at least nurturing and encouraging them during sessions. Rather than helping vulnerable people to work through their psychosis, the likes of Sinison might be making the situation worse. The tragic case of Carol Myers may be an example of this. Myers, a 41-year-old former patient of Sinison, was found dead in 2005, leaving behind a statement saying she had suffered satanic child abuse at the hands of her parents. It was discovered that she had spent years in and out of psychiatric hospitals and private clinics after she'd estranged herself from her family in her 20s. Quote, upon hearing about her death, the family felt shattered and confused about the claim she'd made in her life assessment, reports The Guardian. She said she'd been abused by her parents, who were the high priest and priestess of a satanic cult, and during her teens she'd had 6 children, some fathered by Joseph, her father, that she'd been forced to kill. She also said she had an implant in her eye that would explode if she spoke of the Satanists, and that a friend she'd confided in was murdered in front of her. Just like the Holly Gregg story, Carol's charges were easily proven to be false, continues the report. The sister, whose murder she'd apparently witnessed, actually died of heart problems 2 years before Carol was born. The house fire too predated Carol's birth. It seemed the mental health professionals rarely challenged these impossible horrors. Worse, they'd concluded that Carol's psychological problems came as a result of this fictitious abuse. Though it's not clear the methodology used by Sinison on her patients, if such abuse was regularly taking place, one would assume a large cross-section of therapists would have similar cases. The fact that only Sinison and a handful of others have unearthed allegations of satanic abuse suggests they are in some way creating them. Today, the satanic hysteria of the 80s and 90s is considered a moral panic, and the majority of mental health experts and accredited psychotherapists dismiss these early and subsequently discredited claims of ritual satanic abuse. Various methods originating in the United States for dealing with, or some might say implanting, satanic allegations, which were often practiced and expanded by amateurs, such as a preacher and conspiracy theorist Fritz Springmeier, are rejected by experts. And those familiar with the alternative media will no doubt recognise the name Fritz Springmeier. He wrote the book The Illuminati Formula Used to Create an Undetectable Total Mind Control Slave. Say that 10 times fast. And unlike Sinison, he doesn't actually have any formal credentials. He's just some bearded Christian bloke running around Southern America saying that he's deprogrammed people. And a topic that you all might want to look into, which I think is related to this, is called recovered memory therapy. And it seems to be the kind of thing that Sinison and Springmeier and others may actually be using. It's basically a method used in psychotherapy that has since been dropped for being unethical and inaccurate, but at one time it was considered a way to recover past traumatic experiences in patients. And there have been several court cases where people have sued doctors and psychiatrists for using this method, recovered memory therapy, because it led to false rape allegations and things like that. In other words, just because somebody says something in therapy doesn't mean what they say is true. It may just mean they're psychologically troubled in some other way, or abuse has occurred, but not quite in the way that they're articulating. I'd also point you all to an infamous book that came out in 1980 called Michelle Remembers, which was published as an autobiography, but was basically fiction, which detailed the sessions of a therapist, Lawrence Pazder, recovering the satanic abuse of his patient. It would make a bloody good film, but in the end it was debunked, people sued for libel, which got him to retract certain things. But it's an important book in that it coincided with a lot of the satanic allegations that would emerge in the following years. In fact, Pazder is the one that coined the phrase satanic ritual abuse. And after this book, all of a sudden people were remembering their own satanic abuse, and therapists began playing out the role of Pazder from the book in their own therapy sessions. I guess you could call it predictive programming, but the book clearly was a starting point for a lot of these false stories that followed after it. But interestingly, Pazder never claimed the events were real. In a 1990 interview with The Mail on Sunday, he admitted that he didn't really know if any of it happened. He just said that Michelle believed that it happened. In other words, like Sinison, it came through the therapy sessions. It doesn't make it true. He and Sinison have never investigated the claims. Their jobs are supposed to be assessing the mental state of their patients, yet they've ran with these stories for publicity. And you know what the constant theme is with all these people? Pazder, Sinison, Springmeier, the CRA? They're all deeply religious. Could it be that their own belief in Satan is manifesting through their work? They're conjuring up this stuff because they need it to justify their own belief in Satan. I don't want to take too much more time, but I also think when we look at some of the more wilder claims about MKUltra, you have Transformation of America, that book that focuses on Kathy O'Brien, which for a time was a popular element of the conspiracy community, I think there are definite parallels to be drawn. It's the same kind of recovered memory allegations, except Satan and Satanism is replaced with the CIA and secret experiments. It's still somebody making allegations of a certain kind of abuse without any real evidence that somebody managed to uncover through some unknown method of deprogramming, whatever that means. And I know MKUltra did exist, don't get me wrong. It's just claims from people like Kathy O'Brien are not backed up in the declassified documents. She goes above and beyond what can be verified. That doesn't make it necessarily false, but I personally think these kind of stories mirror each other. And the whole MKUltra stuff, more recently in the past, let's say 5 years, morphed into this Illuminati music industry subculture. This new hobby everybody seems to have on YouTube about pointing out so-called Illuminati symbolism in music videos. Now, I don't doubt that it's there, I've seen it. But that also tells me that it's not really secret and it's not really hidden. It literally says, on that wall behind Rihanna, Illuminati. That's not a secret code. So, I'd suggest this is more of a marketing tool to appeal to people looking for the symbolism, rather than the symbolism having any real significance itself. Controversy creates cash. People are talking about it. That's a win for them. I fail to see what the symbolism accomplishes outside of just making people talk about it. It's not magic. It's not making people go commit murders. So what's its purpose, and what's the purpose of talking about it? You could say it's symbolic in that the youth are brainwashed into listening to shit music, but that's no more mind control than it's ever been. That's just corporate marketing. And I also think people take this Illuminati slave thing a bit too seriously as well. Britney Spears is not an actual slave, but she is a victim of the corporate music industry that she was thrust into from being a young girl. It's a sad life, most likely. She's probably not happy. You also look at, you know, Justin Bieber acting out and Miley Cyrus going crazy. That's just the result of the way they've been brought up in the industry. I'm sure that when Britney Spears went potty and shaved her head, it's actually because she has some issues that the life she's chosen or was put into has created for her. But I don't think she's actually being taken away to a CIA cage after each performance with like Mickey Mouse wallpaper or whatever people say.
One of the elements of where they want to take the world is a third world war.
And this guy, Albert Pike, who was a Freemasonic god in America in the 1800s, Sovereign Grand Commander, Mother Supreme, Council of the World, and all this stuff. They love their titles, these people. Pathetic.
And finally, to top off this episode on Satanic Panic, I want to briefly touch on the concept that there's a worldwide Satanic / Masonic conspiracy, which interestingly is something Lawrence Pazder himself believed in and probably influenced his uncovering of Michelle's quote satanic abuse. But yeah, I mean, you've all heard this, that the world's politicians and top businessmen and people that go to Bilderberg and Skull and Bones and Bohemian Grove, and that it's all secret Luciferianism or Satanism or Freemasonry is satanic. Again, we get to this point of definitions where things are never clear. But there are people out there that put the world's corruption at the foot of Satan. And to illustrate why I think some of these so-called facts about the world elite probably aren't as accurate as some think they are, we'll refer to the most searched article on wideshut.co.uk, and that's Albert Pike's Three World Wars Letter Hoax, which was a show and an article I did years ago now. But one of the key elements of the global satanic / Masonic conspiracy is that Albert Pike wrote a letter to Italian revolutionary Giuseppe Mazzini in 1871 predicting or outlining three world wars that the satanic Illuminati were going to carry out. World War I, World War II, and a third war between Muslims and Zionists, or Russia, China, and America. Depends who you talk to regarding the third world war, but the idea to begin with was that it was between Muslims and Zionists. Now, if you go to this letter, you've all seen it. It's online. You can Google it. Just type in Three World Wars letter and you'll get the text. Most rational people, when they read this, will immediately scratch their heads at the dates of everything. How could Albert Pike use terms like communism and Nazism and Zionism in 1871, long before they were all coined? He may have been able to say communism, that was kind of in the mix, slightly. But definitely not Nazism and Zionism. And how can he be a member of the Illuminati when they were disbanded at least 50 years before he wrote the letter? Oh, I guess, you know, they went on in secret. And of course, the conspiracy is that it's secret and he's outlining their plan. So of course he knew about these words in advance because he created them and he's some kind of Masonic evil god. So you go in this kind of circular debate where people say, well, look, everything he wrote happened, so he must have written the letter. But this tells me that they haven't really looked at the source material. The proof that the letter is a fraud and wasn't written by Pike is because it doesn't actually appear in any literature before 1958, when the text appears in anti-Freemasonry book Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr. And Carr doesn't quote the letter. It's his own writing, his own interpretation, his own paraphrasing of something that he heard about from somewhere else. In other words, the Three World War text that is all over the internet that everybody refers to as the letter was actually written in 1958 by William Guy Carr after World War I and II had already happened and during a time when you could easily envisage a war between Arabs and Jews. It's called the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So there are no caveats to this theory. The text that people refer to is not even a letter. It was never suggested that it was a letter. It was written by William Guy Carr. Now Carr does cite an alleged letter written by Pike, and he cites it from an earlier book written in 1925 called The Mystery of Freemasonry Unveiled by Cardinal Rodriguez. And he says the letter was once on view in the British Museum Library in London. But Carr had to later admit that this wasn't the case when he actually bothered to follow up on his source material. So the text everybody uses is not actually the letter, and the citation for the letter doesn't actually exist. And Rodriguez's book also does not actually contain a letter. He cites an earlier book called Lay Palladianism. And when you get to this book and go through the translations and whatever, it makes no mention of the Three World Wars, just that Albert Pike wanted to destroy all religions and was really anti-Catholicism, and he wanted to convert everyone over to Luciferianism. But that's not the same thing as predicting Three World Wars, so the information gets skewed and there is no real original source. Now, in Rodriguez's book, he also cites another book written by a pseudonym, Dr. Batil, and the person who used the pseudonym Dr. Batil is Leo Taxil, a self-professed hoaxer from the late 1800s, and he wrote a bunch of anti-Freemasonry books in order to mock both Freemasons and the Catholic Church. And in 1906, he told National Magazine, "The public made me what I am, the arch liar of the period. For when I first commenced to write against the Masons, my object was amusement, pure and simple. The crimes I laid at their door were so grotesque, so impossible, so widely exaggerated, I thought everybody would see the joke and give me credit for originating a new line of humour. But my readers wouldn't have it, so they accepted my fables as gospel truth, and the more I lied, for the purpose of showing that I lied, the more convinced they became that I was a paragon of veracity." So the text on the internet claiming to be the letter is not actually the letter, it's just something written in a book by William Guy Carr, who cites another book that actually doesn't have the original letter, because it never was on display in the British Museum Library, and other books that author cited trace back to a hoaxer who was deliberately writing anti-Masonic literature for his own amusement. And this is used as evidence that there's a worldwide satanic conspiracy, which also has its roots in Freemasonry. Well, a lot of the anti-Freemasonry rhetoric and the satanic allegations against Freemasonry actually originate with the hoaxer Leo Taxil and nonsense that he was writing for his own amusement. So I'm not necessarily saying there is no Satanism crossover with Freemasonry or that elements of the elite class don't carry out bizarre ritual, because they do. But some of the evidence used to support a satanic world order is clearly nonsense, and I have to question those that use it as evidence because they've obviously not done the critical research. Now, I've not got anything particularly profound to say in closing, other than I personally do not buy that there is a widespread satanic problem. It's not something that I worry about. Some of these subjects definitely interest me, and I find them entertaining in a way, but it's not something that I'm going to lose sleep over. Particularly in the satanic ritual abuse subject, I'm more interested in the dubious psychotherapists that are promoting the concept rather than the concept itself being true, because the evidence simply isn't there. But what do you guys think? Am I missing something? Or do you perhaps agree with me? Do you have anything you want to share? Let me know in the YouTube comments below or on the website comments. You can, of course, subscribe to the Wide Shut webcast on iTunes. You can search us on Stitcher to listen on your cell phone or mobile phone. I know I'm British, sometimes I forget that. The MP3 is on the website with the RSS feed. Or for some extra visual content, check us out on YouTube. I've been your host, Keelan Balderson, and you've been listening to the Wide Shut webcast.